All right, and we're on. Welcome to episode 71 of the Chirpin' Yotes podcast. You got me, we got Matt, we got Granny. A lot to talk about, but first, boys, how are we doing?
Happy Easter, everybody.
Oh, yes, happy Easter.
Everybody had a great day today, got to see some family and enjoy the holiday. Had a good Easter weekend. You know, it's been real nice out here in Arizona. It's been nice and cool.
Beautiful.
And rainy and
beautiful day. Granny?
As I'm hearing you talk about how nice it's been in Arizona, for the first time all winter, we actually have snow on the ground. Yes,
wow.
That is right. For the first time all winter, we
had March?
Over a foot and a half of snow dropped on us in a two-day period.
So fuck little mini Canada that you live in there, Grandy, because Arizona's gotten snow and we have a hockey team.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's actually a little funny because Arizona got more snow than Minnesota.
Yeah, kiss my ass, state of hockey.
That is crazy. That is a crazy statistic. I mean, I believe you, but that just sounds crazy. But yes, happy Easter to all. He is risen. Let's get this thing going. So I guess another resurrection to keep the theme up. The Coyotes playing a bit better. We had a, legendary son of a legendary figure come up, I guess, to phrase that. Little Josh Doan has made his appearance. Played now three games, done pretty well by looks like. But Matt, what are you making of Doan's return? Essentially, a Doan back on the team.
So it's kind of weird. I was expecting more, like all we heard about, written about him, kind of watching him play and stuff like that. Is, you know, he's got this fantastic shot. He finds space. You know, he creates tons of opportunities in different ways, and he scores two goals that if there was a 19 on his sweater, I wouldn't have questioned whether or not it was actually Shane. Like the bat the puck out of the air from a foot out and the redirection in front, that's that Shane Doan. Like, I mean, it was so surreal in his first game, seeing him score two goals the way he did. Unbelievable. He could have had four in that game. I mean, he got stuffed on a breakaway by Saros where he tried going like backhand forehand and Saros got the pad out. He could have had an empty netter in that game. He could have had an assist. He set Michelli up on a breakaway and Michelli couldn't bury. Like he probably created five or six high danger chances on his own. Like just making things happen. He was it his second game that he poked the puck around Shen and created another chance, on a breakaway. He's been a breath of fresh air for Matias Michelli too, because Kraus, unfortunately, he's been, I think the goal that he scored against the Rangers was his first in 20 games, first since like February 18th or something like that. Or I'm sorry, January 18th. No, February 18th, month and a half. Yeah. That was Kraus's first goal in that period of time. And when Kraus isn't going, Michelli wasn't going, and we finally saw them split up. And I think having somebody that can play make and kind of do what Doan can do was a breath of fresh air for Michelli, because Michelli's now got goals in three straight, and I think he's on like a five-game point streak now. But he had, 5 points as well in the three games that Doan's been up. So his influence early on is noticeable. It's not just, this nepotism thing that
I was going to bring that up, that freaking tweet. Yeah. I was going to bring that up. That was nuts. What a bad take.
Anybody that hasn't watched Doan play is still living on this, they drafted him because Shane Doan was there and they wanted to keep Doan around and they thought it would help. And, it's the only reason they took him. But right now Doan's looking like he could have gone in the back end of the first round. That he might have actually been a steal as a second round pick. He's been unbelievable in Tucson. He had 26 goals at his call up, which was tied for the rookie lead in the AHL. He gets called up. He has 5 points in three games, and he's been every bit of what you want out of a mid to late first round pick And, you know, here he is, 22 years old. This isn't even going to count as his rookie year. Technically, his rookie year will be next year. You know, if he's even remotely close to what he's done already, he'll be a Calder favorite next year.
One of the things that surprised me the most with him is hearing his weaknesses, hearing all this talk about his weaknesses as being his skating and his, is he going to be able to play to the pace of the NHL? And he steps foot on the ice and it instantly plays with just breakneck pace. He's not the fastest guy out there, and I don't want to make it sound like he is, but just with the pace he's playing, he's flying up and down. And he's doing all those little things that you want to see guys like him do, which is he goes into the corners to battle. Something me and Matt had talked about last week, actually, on our last pod, was we are looking for that third line mate for Cooley and Gunther because they need.
I think we just.
Yep, might have lost him. Okay.
To continue on Grandy's point, we talked last week that Clayton Keller might not be the guy that should be playing with Cooley and Gunther long term because the type of game Keller plays, it doesn't necessarily detract from what Cooley and Gunther do, but those two kids play with more pace. They play down low. They play off the rush, and Keller is a cycle high, you know, look for 15 passes before anybody takes a shot. And we talked about Daniel Boot potentially being a fit there, but Josh Doan in, you know, the type of game he plays with size, with pace, you know, with such a high motor, he might make the most sense there.
We got sorry you back on, Grady. No, you're fine.
Yeah, sorry about that, boys. I don't know how much of my point Matt was able to finish. I heard him start to finish it when I left. But, he's looking like that third piece we talked about.
Mm-hmm. So, let me ask you guys a question real fast, though. I saw something circle around. So I want to make sure that I could have been, I don't know. Do you think, if Doan's permanent place, do you think that puts in, I hope I'm phrasing this right, obviously we're Keller fans, but does Keller's future change here with the addition of Doan, or is it something that's still locked in? I saw someone saying like he's going to wear out a crest out at the end of the season. Again, it was Twitter, so who really knows, right? But so I saw some people talking about a small thread somewhere. So
no, so the reality is if you're the Coyotes, you want as many good pieces as you have, and you don't necessarily go, we have three top-line wingers. And it's way too early to say Doan's a top line winger at the best of his game. I mean, realistically, three games. Realistically, he's probably going to be a second line winger, maybe a third line winger. He's had a phenomenal start, but it's way too soon to go these three games project out to, you know, his career. I mean, if that was the case, he'd go on to score, you know, 1,600 points in 1,000 games, and that's not going to happen. So he could, but
mathematically, I guess
you're talking about like Mario Lemieux numbers, and that's not Josh Doan. I'm sorry, fan base. It's not going to happen. Realistically, I think he lacks a couple of the tools to be a top line winger. I do think the two top line wingers on this team are right now are Keller and Gunther. That said, if you look at teams that win cups, they don't win cups with one big line. I mean, Boston lost to St. Louis with their one big line. You know, Colorado has won a cup, but they didn't win a cup until they traded for Darcy Kemper. They added some depth with Burakovsky and Nichushkin and really kind of filled out their second line. But they're that big line that they had of Rantanen, Landeskog, and McKinnon, you know, 2 years in a row, they got booted out of the playoffs. You have to be more than a one-line team. You've got to have some depth there. So, no, there's no reason to move on from Keller or think Keller is going to move on, because maybe you've got a guy who could play on the wing with, you know, Cooley and Gunther. Now you need to look at Keller and go, okay, we've got Keller. Is Geeky that guy? And maybe Daniel Boot. And now we've got two lines that become pick your poison. You know, if you're an opponent, which line are you going to put your top defensive pairing and top shutdown center out? Because they can both beat you. And ultimately, that's what you want to do with your top two lines.
One thing you see constantly in the NHL playoffs is these one-line NHL teams go out there and get shut down over and over and over again, because that's easy to game plan against. Ideally, you want three lines that can be a threat to score. Not your third line isn't going to be a threat to score anytime they step on the ice, granted, but you want three lines that can roll, three lines that can
exactly
be that threat. And trading away good players because you had a prospect hit for nothing isn't what you do. Keller,
you can have more guys play the same role. You can have multiple guys play the same role. It's not a bad thing.
Well, thanks for answering my question, boys. I do appreciate that. Something I saw and I was like, that'd be an interesting podcast topic. So I'm glad I remembered it, though. That's nice. But I mean, in addition to Doan, I mean, we have Cooley's doing real well. First hat trick. That's pretty nice. I mean, who else are we liking so far? Shelley, of course. Always good.
Grandy, you start this one. I want to hear your thoughts on Cooley's progression since like roughly Christmas.
Since roughly Christmas. So Cooley started out the year scoring points, but there was a lot of holes in his game. Then he got saddled with Liam O'Brien. And then, that was rough hockey to watch, but it did something me and Matt have talked about at length, is that did help him learn how to play defense and learn how to do these other things right. Since Christmas, he's been a different player. Since he's had a guy like Gunther who plays with the same frenetic energy that he plays with, it's been unreal. I mean, you're looking at a guy who really has just he has indeed turned it up to another level. For a while, the points weren't clicking like they were for Gunther because bad luck, just inability to finish, just stuff like that. The points weren't there. But now that the points are starting to come, I think nobody can really look at Cooley and say that they're disappointed with the way he's playing, essentially. I've loved what I've seen from Logan Cooley since the start of the new year. I've loved what I've seen with Logan Cooley and Dylan Gunther paired together. I think these are two-thirds of our top line going forward. I really feel confident in that. I mean, one thing that keeps getting brought up is, oh, is he a Nathan MacKinnon type? Nathan MacKinnon didn't score a point a game until his fifth season in the NHL. And his second season in the NHL, Nathan MacKinnon barely eclipsed 40 points. Nathan MacKinnon didn't become Nathan MacKinnon overnight, people.
Until he had to quit carbs first. He had to eat cardboard and fucking grass or whatever the hell.
He had to get him all of that chickpea pasta, man.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, chickpea pasta. Yeah.
So, as somebody on a diet and watching his carb intake, chickpea pasta is the most disgusting thing on the face of this planet. Just, it's gross.
You know what? To each their own. I don't necessarily, in comparison to real pasta, it sucks. But I don't actually think as a standalone dish that it's that bad.
So if you never tasted pasta, you'd be like, all right, pretty good.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, like if I was, you know, just born yesterday. And like, you know, at a year and a half old, my mom's like, you know what, you're going to try some spaghetti and meatballs and whatever, you know, and I'm like eating it and it's chickpea pasta. I'm probably like, you know what, this isn't too bad, but it's because I haven't had the real thing. You know,
give that to your son exclusively. Don't give him anything else. Just give him only chickpea pasta. Yeah. Don't let him ever get the glory of real pasta. So he becomes an NHL player.
Well, yeah, eating healthy sucks, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's horrible. It's not like, you know, eating rice cakes. Rice cakes are disgusting.
Even the cinnamon on them is it's a lie. I mean, that's terrible. That's just.
I want to know who actually purchases rice cakes. Like, honestly, I've been on a diet now for a while. I've never once purchased them
myself. I'm not going to lie. I've bought rice cakes on multiple occasions, and I've never actually opened them, and I've thrown multiple packs of them away when I clean out my pantry.
So, you're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I have purchased them because – you always go into something with good intention.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, you buy rice cakes with a good intention, for sure. Yeah,
but it doesn't mean that they ever actually get consumed. But to Grandy's point, absolutely. Like, nobody is saying that Logan Cooley is going to be Nathan MacKinnon. I'm not even sure that his ceiling is that high. You know, you're talking about one of the top three centers in the NHL, but to think that this is who Logan Cooley is, and maybe he'll take another little step, and that's just it. You know, Clayton Keller, for example, he's a guy that all of us watched, and he had that tremendous rookie season. He put up 65 points, and then he didn't eclipse 50 points the next three seasons, and then all of a sudden he's a point per game player at 23 years old, his age 23 season. You know, it clicks at different times for different players. So, you know, there's a ton of room for him to grow. One little fact that I'm not sure has been brought up or that anybody has mentioned since January 16th, Logan Cooley has scored 13 goals. He leads all players 20 and under. And the reason I say 20 and under is for anybody in Montreal listening that wants to bring up how good Slafkovsky's been, he's only had 10 goals. Yeah, that guy. He's only had 10 goals in that span. But he actually leads all rookies as well. That includes Connor Bedard. He scored more goals since January 16th than Connor Bedard has. Points, that's a little different. The assists haven't exactly been there in that span. I think he's only got 5 assists. A lot of that comes from, you know, I don't want to take anything away from Dylan Gunther, but Dylan Gunther has scored shorthanded. He scored quite a few on the power play. He's got to work towards that even strength points. Those will come. But we also saw Lawson Crouse go 20 games without a goal. And when Lawson Crouse is your other winger and he's not scoring, it makes it difficult for you to have assists. And it's not for, I mean, anybody that's watching games, they realize it's not for a lack of, you know, inspired passing. He creates a ton of chances game in and game out. That Nashville game that he had a hat trick in, or I'm sorry, Josh Doan's first game against Columbus, where Josh Doan kind of stole the show. Logan Cooley probably could have had 4 assists in that game. Gunther got robbed on sliding plays twice. Once was, if you look at like the game highlights, it'd be the first one that comes up, the cross ice pass from Crouse to Gunther that Elvis came across and made a huge save on when the game was 2-0 or whatever. Cooley was the one that brought it into the zone. Cooley had a backhand pass to Gunther that Gunther got robbed on. Cooley had a pass out to Valimaki, who hit the post. He's setting up high danger chances game in and game out for the guys around him. So even though the assist numbers aren't there, they're going to be there. That he is seeing the ice very well. His IQ, his hockey IQ and his hockey sense have drastically improved since early on in the season. That's all coming for him. And I won't have the debate about, you know, who's farther along, him, Gunther, you know, where they're at in their development. We've talked about Gunther being a potentially elite first line winger, and I still think Cooley's ceiling is higher. And he's shown flashes of it over the last 3 months consistently, not just on occasion.
I'll take it. I'm glad he's on my team. That's for sure. I've definitely liked his play a lot. I like that he got a hat trick too. That's pretty cool. And Doan, once again, like his dad, getting two goals, not a hat trick. Being there a couple thousand games before he gets his first one.
You know, the one mistake that I think he made in that hat trick game was they put him out there on the penalty kill when they were up 7-3? When Forsberg scored the goal. And
oh, yeah.
If you watch the highlight of the Forsberg goal, the somebody misses a shot wide. It rims around the boards. Gunther kind of loses a race to the puck, to the defenseman. It was close, but Logan Cooley had blown the zone. Like, he was thinking hat trick, and he took off. And if Dylan Gunther gets there, he probably doesn't score his hat trick goal on an empty net. He scores it shorthanded on a breakaway. It was that close. And that those are the little aspects of his game that he might need to clean up just a little bit, especially if he wants to stay on the penalty kill. You know, that might be where you have to go, hey, I get that you want it, but you have to read that play. If it's 50-50, you can't be blowing that zone. You can go if you know your guy's going to win it. But, you know, I get it. You know, you're out there on the penalty kill, you know, early in the penalty kill too, because your coach wants to give you an opportunity to go make a play in a game that's already out of hand, but you still have to stay within structure. So little things like that, I'm sure he'll clean them up. But if those are the biggest things
you
have to worry about with him, you know,
I'll take it.
Yeah, you're in a great position.
It. Yeah. This future's bright, that's for sure. I mean, just this week has shown us that.
Real quick, though, I want to go back to the Cooley assist argument that not argument, but talk. Correct discussion. Me if I'm wrong, but out of those five assists, four of them are primary, too, right?
I believe so, yeah. And I think all but one of them are at even strength. The only one that came on the power play was Krause's goal against New York.
That's another thing that's keeping them from getting these assist numbers that he should be getting is the lack of playmaking, because Krause is not a playmaker at all. He just isn't.
No, he's great at retrieving. He's great defensively, but he's not going to be that guy that you enter the zone, you find Krause finds somebody else. You know, you're just not going to get that with him.
And we don't have too many guys. We have guys that can make good passes on the defensive end, but outside of maybe Jersey, maybe Moser, we don't have guys that can really create from the back end. So you're not going to see a lot of the creation. You're not going to see him stack up these secondary assists like a few other guys, Connor Bedard, have been doing. So,
Bedard doesn't exactly have playmakers either. That one's a weird one because Bedard pulls like four guys to him so that he can send his teammates in on a 2-on-0, and you're still in the NHL. It's hard to fuck that up. Like, that's where Colin Bedard's secondary stuff comes from. He makes everybody look so foolish by drawing him to himself. But, yeah.
He's good.
There's a lot of secondary guys in the league, and, you know, a lot of them are defensemen, but there are some forwards out there who, you know, their rate of secondary assists are – as high as their primary. And the argument for those guys is, well, those are the guys battling on the boards and retrieving pucks for their teammates, but it's usually not. They're like the guy that, you know, maybe picked the puck up off the wall on a rim around, or, you know, they took a shot, a rebound came out to somebody, and that person made a pass to another player who scored. That's where you get a lot of secondary assists. And there's a reason that a lot of people that put a lot of stock into primary points refer to secondary assists as noise, because you didn't necessarily make a play that led to a goal, but it was important enough that you got the shot off or that you were able to maintain the zone. The goal doesn't happen without that, but your role in scoring wasn't nearly as big as the guy who made the pass or who finished, you know. So,
no, nothing. The top centers in the league aren't going to have high numbers of secondary assists, but it's not a 4-to-1 ratio is kind of, right. Kind of what my point is.
Yeah, and a lot of those guys with secondary assists too, if you look at where their points come, they come on the power play where the puck's moving around constantly and where you're constantly in possession. I haven't looked, but I'd venture to guess of, you know, Connor McDavid's points or his assists, he's probably racked up 30-something secondary assists, maybe 40, you know, because he gets the puck into the zone, he controls it, he sets everything up, finds, you know, a guy out high who takes a shot and Zach Hyman scores on a rebound or something like that. You know, like, it's not to say secondary assists aren't important, but the guys that get them, generally they get them on the power play. They get them, you know, in scenarios where you're not scoring off the rush, where they're not the super pretty plays to set things in motion. But while we're sticking to the young guns, you know who had a really, really nice secondary assist a couple nights ago? It was Dylan Gunther against Nashville.
Dylan Gunther's so good, man. That dude's so good.
And he batted the puck out of the air and then chipped it to Keller, who went to Kerfoot, back to Keller for the one-timer. Those are the secondary assists that you can live with a guy getting. That was a beautiful play, just knocking the puck out of the air. Yeah. He's been so good.
Good. Like, just so steady. Good, bro. So just good. Steady. I mean,
you know, like, you just... got guys that break into the league and they're flashy and they put up points, but they put up points because they sacrifice defense and,
yeah,
you know, we're not seeing that with him. He's played a very good two-way game. He plays well, you know, in the neutral zone. He plays within a structure. I've really liked his game. I've liked it a lot. And, you know, over the course of a full season, the year he's put up, you know, it's a 25-goal, 25-assist season. You might go, that's pretty good. And then you're like, wow, he's still 20 years old. And that's what he's pacing out.
Let me ask you this. Do you think, and this is way too early, I'll ask both of you guys this, you guys are definitely the prospect geniuses here, I'm not going to lie. Would you be shocked if in 15 years, Gunther is on someone's Mount Rushmore and they come on a guest of our podcast somehow still running? Would you be surprised they put Dylan Gunther as one of their picks for their Mount Rushmore? At the pace he's going, obviously it's a super early sample size. I know what I'm asking, but I thought of the question. I thought it'd be interesting to ask you guys. What do you think, how do you think he'll develop enough to be on the Mount Rushmore, or is he more of like a Ring of Honor, maybe, in the Chirpin' Yotes podcast Ring of Honor, maybe?
So, real quick, if I can take this one first.
Yeah, go for it.
One thing that's kind of remarkable about the Coyotes' Mount Rushmore that kind of separates it a bit is how weak it is comparatively.
Kachuk, hey, we have Gary on there for a lot of teams. And Wayne Gretzky, okay? We're just
fine. Antoine Vermette.
Wayne Gretzky and Gary.
We have Chris Kolanos.
We're fine. Brett Hull is a Coyote.
I say Chris Kolanos.
Brett Hull is a Coyote. Yeah. We're fine.
We got Shane Dillon like six times.
Wayne Gretzky, Gary Bettman. We have a great Mount Rushmore.
What's more than Mount Rushmore?
If you play fast and loose with the parameters to select somebody.
You know? It's a personalized one. That's all.
So what I'm going to say is it wouldn't surprise me to see two out of the four names not on Mount Rushmore or on Mount Rushmore in 15 years, part of this rebuild. I think Keller will be one of those. The question is who the other? Is Gunther the other? It's going to be.
Could be somebody that's not here yet. Could be Simashev. Could be
us.
You know, celebrating us podcast. When the Coyotes win the lottery this year. I mean, there's. So I'm gonna throw a name out there. Corvo. I don't know if you guys follow him on Twitter. He and I'm 99% sure he was the one that tweeted. It was either him or Matt Smith. One of them tweeted out something that like hit me huge, and it was, I'm watching the Coyotes' greatest players in franchise history come into the league right now, during this rebuild, whereas teams like Montreal are getting great players, but they'll never stack up to their own history. So as Coyotes fans, this is a very encouraging time to be watching the team. I mean, we've had great players in Jeremy Roenick and Keith Tkachuk, Teppo Numminen. You know, Mike Gartner scored 700 goals in the league and scored his 700th as a member of the Coyotes. Rick Tocchet spent part of his career here. Claude Lemieux played here. There's been superstars in Arizona in the past. Mm-hmm. And I don't think any of them will stack up to the potential that outside of Shane Doan, the potential that, you know, I mean, Clint Keller's already second in franchise history in points as a Coyote. You know, Logan Cooley, Dylan Gunther, Connor Geeky, these can be guys who end up with more points at the end of their career than Shane Doan or anybody else that's played in Arizona. And if things go well, you know, I'm not saying we have another Shane Doan where somebody spends their entire career here, but it's one of those Joe Thornton, Patrick Marleau, Patrick Kane, you know, where somebody is going to spend the majority of their golden years, their prime years, their all of it here. And then, you know, when this team gets older and it's got to go through a rebuild again, you might see them, you know, go off to a team that's winning when they're 35 or 36 trying to capture another cup. And that's okay. But if Logan Cooley plays here from 19 to 35 and he plays 16 years as a Coyote, he's going to be at the top of like every single possible record for the franchise. So seeing that tweet that was, we're witnessing the greatest players who will likely play in the Coyotes 25 year or 27 year current history coming into the league right now. That was kind of eye opening like that.
Not to put
a ton of pressure on these young kids because it's early, but there's something to that, that like I never thought about until I read that. That's a very, very valid point.
And that's what I was going to add too, to piggyback off your point, was unlike a lot of franchises, I truly think, obviously the arena drama, whatever, you can just, let's toss that aside for now. I think this team, these young guns coming up, will probably be among the best we'll ever have, you know, given, you know, however long the world lasts or whatever. You know, I think this will be some of the best groups we ever had. Just like you said, perfectly said my point exactly. I think our best years are ahead of us. Unlike a lot of franchises that are starting to go down, they'll probably be bad for a while. Ours are very, very well ahead of us. And that's great. I think we're in a great position. Yeah, it sucks right now, but who knows, in 5 years, we could be laughing off the arena drama. Remember that one time that this failed and now we have Cooley out here tearing it up. I think I truly do believe that. Truly do. So I'm excited.
I mean, they could be rebuilding again in, you know, 15 or 18 years as everybody's gotten old, and it's just something.
Of course, that's okay. Yeah, that's okay.
This discourse again when they're drafting my kid and, you know, he's going on to put up that's it, numbers.
All right. Not a big deal.
it's in the bag, man. It's in the bag.
Hey, you know, I'll buy his jersey first thing.
There you go. But you know what? Since you mentioned it, we actually just ordered him a Logan Cooley jersey. So
no way. Which one, by the way, did you get?
The black Cochino one.
Oh, yeah, of course. Classic. Yeah. That's not bad.
I mean, not bad. It's an 18-month jersey. He's already a little big. It'll be ready for him, you know, for
perfect.
He'll be going to opening night, you know, next season or whatever. But in any event, like they might not be the best players that we ever see in team history, but they're going
best to homegrown at least.
Yeah, they're going to line up with the, you know, if 50 years from now somebody's looking back going, who are the best players in that franchise's history? I mean, a couple of these guys might land in everybody's top 10. Right? We don't know. But the way they're looking early on, there's potential for two of them at least.
No, for sure. Yeah. And Grant, I had a quick question for you. We're talking about like rebuilding teams. You know, right now the Suns have KD. Who would the KD be? Maybe Matt, you can answer this too. I just don't know. You know, I want to know basketball. Who's the KD of hockey? you'd say. Is there one like, do we have an equivalent? Yeah, I'll say, do we have one like that, Grandy? It just hit me right now that I was like, oh, wait, I meant to ask that.
Taylor Hall.
Oh.
He's not the level of player KD is, but
I'm gonna say, yeah.
He's a really good player who bounces around from team to team to team. Granted, he's not bouncing around from team to team to team looking for championships, but that's really the closest you got.
Well, I mean, he kind of is, but you don't have the same freedom to do it in hockey as you do in basketball. I mean, the way contracts are structured in the NHL and how much of a percentage of the cap a guy like Taylor Hall has taken up throughout his career makes him really difficult to find a winning team to send him to. And whereas with basketball, you know, a player like that can make up 30 or 35% of the formula needed to win a championship, Taylor Hall might make up 5% or 8% on his best day for somebody else. I mean, the best player in the world, Connor McDavid, hasn't played in a Stanley Cup yet. And I'd take him three times the player Taylor Hall is. And it's still not enough. So it's such a hard comparison to make across the sports because one player in basketball can be everything really, you need to get over that hump. And in hockey, it's not. There's a reason why nobody goes out in free agency and buys a team and ices a cup champion. I mean, there's going to be people that argue Vegas, but Vegas was able to trade, you know, I don't want to call Alex Tuch and, you know, any of those guys a bag of pucks, but they didn't give up nearly what Jack Eichel was worth. If Jack Eichel wasn't injured, they were in a position to steal him away.
Bit of luck.
Ottawa was, you know, their owner at the time, Eugene Melnyk, was a cheap ass. Everybody knew it. So moving on from Mark Stone and getting out from under, well, not out from under, but knowing that the following year they were going to have to pay him, and they weren't going to pay him $9 million a year or $8 million a year. So they were willing to move him, and Vegas made a deal to make it happen. They gave up, you know, Eric Brandstrom, who was a first round pick. They gave up a first round pick. Vegas has still had to mortgage their entire future year over year to stay competitive. And they, granted, they got a Stanley Cup out of it, but in the expansion draft, they were able to get players like Jonathan Marchessault, William Karlsson, you know, the players that a lot of teams would like to build around. They were able to put together a pretty decent core of them right off the bat, and that was important. So it worked through expansion for them, but the league caught on. Seattle made the playoffs and made some noise, but you know,
they're not like Vegas.
No, they weren't a cup contender, and you look at where they are right now, they're back down. And no team that was a lottery team last year went out and bought five or six free agents, high profile free agents at that are now, you know, a Stanley Cup contender. The one argument you might have is Philly picked what, seventh last year, and they're technically in a playoff spot right now, but they're falling fast. I mean, you don't go from lottery team to contender because you sign a couple of free agents. You don't get that here.
Ready? You want to add to that? Where do we lose you? All right. Just going to pull you a bit. Okay. Yeah, there he goes. Okay. He'll be back. I know. For the audio listening, we're having some internet connectivity issues today. I don't know. So if you're listening to this and seeing him popping in and out, that's why you're not going crazy. You're not hearing things. You could be, but not on the podcast. So, but yeah. So I guess, do we want to do
so either... I want to pose a question to you guys. As soon as Grandy gets back here,
okay,
should be any moment now.
Yep.
But we talked about this before show. So Tyler, we'll start with you. Connor McDavid, 975 points in in his career. Edmonton has 10 games left to go.
I was actually ready for this
McDavid,
one.
Does Connor McDavid pick up those 25 points and score his 1,000th career point this year?
Actually, let me pull this up. I actually had it pulled up. But, Grandy, go ahead. While I'm pulling that up, you can go ahead and go, Grandy. Just give me 1 second.
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say he gets really close. He gets close enough to where people are really watching that last game, but I'm going to say no, he doesn't. So he'll finish the season at like 997, 998.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot to ask. It's a 2.5 point average, but we're only talking about 10 games. We're not talking about, you know, can he average 2.5 points over the course of a season?
Yeah, no.
And he's actually, since recovering from his injury, he's averaged like 1.98 points a game. You know, since his first 15 games this year where he was playing injured. So he's not exactly far off. And he does have a couple of easy games in there. I mean,
yep, I should just pull that up.
Schedule up right here. We got St. Louis coming up next. I know Arizona plays them. I think
Dallas will be a challenge.
Colorado. Well, Colorado might be a challenge from
the that too.
The goaltending in Colorado is pretty suspect. I mean,
yeah, Calgary. You
know, that could be one of those games that.
What are you talking about? Georgiev is on top. Is on the Martin Brodeur's top 10 greatest.
That's so wild.
Yeah, That game has like the makings of an 8-6 game.
They just get 3 days off too in the early April. They just get 7th. Oh, it's because they're doing Final Four. That's why. Okay. And then we have the 10th.
There's us. I think they got Arizona twice. I think Arizona's in once. Edmonton, and then Edmonton finishes the year in Arizona.
They finish it in Colorado, but they do play us twice. Yeah, they do play us twice. The 17th is our last game against them.
So, I mean, there's four games or five games on the schedule where he could have 3 or 4 points in those games. Vegas game is going to be a little difficult.
Neither.
Vancouver is going to be difficult, but the two games against Arizona, the game
pretty easy. Hate to say.
And the game against St. Louis, I mean, he could pick up 12 of the points that he needs in those four games and would need 13 over his final six or over the other six, which would be a little more palatable, you know, than the 2.5 point average. I mean, I'm going to say it's a coin flip because I won't bet against McDavid putting up points. I'll bet against the Oilers winning a cup because they find ways to lose out in the playoffs. But, I won't bet against Connor McDavid as a player. I'm going to call it a coin flip. I think there's as much of a chance that he does it as there is that he doesn't.
Well, yeah, I think it's better. He said perfectly. I mean, I think he does it. It's McDavid, for crying out loud. So I think he does it too.
The way Ingram and Veggie have looked, he could easily put up 5 points against us both games.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not out of the realm. So, to parlay off of that, does Zach Hyman hit 60 goals?
The rich kid, you mean?
No, yes. His rich parents. Yes.
His rich parents. Oh, his rich parents. Excuse me. Rich parents, Hyman? I don't know, man. I mean, maybe if his parents bought another Jaguar, maybe. I think that's the issue people have with him or something like that. That was so stupid. That was a joke, for the record, by the way.
They need at least $10 million more in their bank account before you can hit the 60.
Yeah, that was so stupid. Well, so, I mean, to summarize, those aren't listening. Who was that guy even? Who even was that guy that started that whole discourse? Who was that guy?
I think it's Andrew Berkshire. He's an out-of-work media personality.
I wonder why he's out of work.
You're not going to get a job with a take like that.
Yeah, dumb, man.
Okay, so there's truth to the fact
of that course,
hockey
yeah.
is an expensive sport.
No, of course.
You don't necessarily become a 50-goal scorer because your parents were rich and had all of this money to throw into your development, you still have to be talented. Maybe there's guys who are borderline NHL players because they had some of those opportunities, but Zach Hyman, when he got to Michigan, he was still a garbage player. Like, yeah. He was not likely to see the ECH at any point in his career. Like, he wasn't going to be anything. And then he figured it out at, like, 23 years old.
Happens,
You know, and at 23 years old, mom and dad's money is not what, you know, gets you there. So, yes, hockey's an expensive sport to play. Equipment's expensive. There is definitely, and I get where what this guy was doing. He was trying to bring light to an issue that hockey is gatekept by people with money, and it's not necessarily gatekept.
This is expensive. This is the way that it is, man. You have to buy pads and skates and sticks.
Ice time. It doesn't matter if you live somewhere where it's frozen all the time. Maintaining an actual ice rink, a regulation ice rink with boards and cooling units, and I don't know how many people actually know this, but if the ice is too cold, it's as bad as the ice being too warm. Like, where it gets soft and, you know, it's not great. When the ice is overly frozen, you get pucks bouncing all over the place. The physics behind ice skating, you're actually melting sections of the ice with your skates as you move along. Mm-hmm. And that's what digs into the ice and gives you traction.
Watch the Winter Classic Minnesota for a good example of these.
Yeah, if it's overly
frozen, you're there.
You have issues. It's not good either. So it's not like you can go, he could have grown up playing in Canada and, you know, we can make it cheap because we can have all these kids playing outdoors and stuff. It doesn't work that way. And the first time a kid falls through the ice and somebody gets sued, that's the end of that. Like, you're not doing that. So, for what it's worth, the sport of hockey can be made cheaper. And the NHL has done a lot in terms of programs that give away used equipment to kids between the ages of 6 and 10.
Yeah.
That, you know, here for $100, we're going to give you every piece of equipment you need. Just go out and buy skates. And for $150, your kid has everything they need to skate. And that might sound like a lot. Have you ever gone and looked at how much a football helmet is or something like that?
Yeah. No, they're expensive.
Or a baseball bat. Fucking baseball bats are $300 for a nice one.
Mm-hmm. Gloves, too. Gloves are crazy expensive. Crazy. Really quick. Yeah.
Good.
Did we lose him?
I don't know. He said real quick and then
really quick to make the point that he was trying to make about one of the very few Jewish players we have in the league just comes off really gross.
Yeah, it does actually, because if he was trying to make that point, there's other players that he could have used to make the example out of. You don't even have to name names. I mean, there's so much literature out there about the average cost of, you know, playing travel, you know, playing house league hockey. I mean, a lot of people that play hockey or watch hockey, I should say, have played at some level. They understand how much equipment is. You know, it's just the way it is. And I get that it's a problem and I get what he was trying to do, but he absolutely went the wrong way
about it. A take like that, you gotta really, really like triple check that script, because you're gonna get cooked or worse. And that's not a good look, buddy.
Absolutely got cooked. I mean, you know it's bad when Elliot Friedman is roasting you. Like, that dude is the most humble reporter out there. He does not throw shade.
No, he doesn't.
Ever at anyone. And if you listen to his podcast, he's always like, I got to be careful here because I don't want to misquote or say.
Yeah, he does take. Yeah, he minds his P's and Q's. Yeah.
And he's throwing. You're an
idiot.
At you when Zach Hyman.
Absolute idiot. Idiot.
Come on, man. That's a horrible take.
Freaking moron. I mean, I don't know. I've said some dumb stuff on here too. But I mean, even that, I mean, I'm smart enough to say something like that. Come on, buddy. But geez, but anyway,
I guess back to the question: yeah. Zach Hyman score 60 goals. He needs 8. I think if Connor, so here's the whole coin flip. If Connor McDavid scores his 1,000th point this year, Zach Hyman
could be those assists. Goals. Yeah. No, I was just about to say that actually. I was just getting up. Yeah, you're right.
If McDavid's going to get there, I think Zach Hyman's going to have to score 50.
And that guy's going to start steaming. That guy's going to be steaming. And his poor inbox.
Can you imagine Toronto, who has absolutely lost their shit that Austin Matthews clipped 60 against Buffalo last night? They're going to lose their shit if Zach Hyman is in the same category as Austin Matthews.
I say bring it on. Hell, I'll Venmo his parents $10 if it helps him get more goals. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck, dude. I'll pay him $10. Shit, I don't care. Fuck him, dude. That's fucking hilarious.
So here's the thing, guys. We're going to start a GoFundMe on Twitter.
Oh, Nivik's parents a billionaire by 2026.
We're going to start a GoFundMe on Twitter to make sure Zach Hyman's parents have enough money for him to score 60 goals this year.
This podcast, man.
So, I mean, anybody that's listening after the fact, I'm sure you could go find this tweet because I'm not going to make a real GoFundMe, but I am going to tweet this out and see how many Toronto fans are pissed off about it. But yeah, look for the
tweet. No, I'll donate to that. If we're pissing off Toronto fans. If we piss off Toronto fans, I'll donate $10 to it. Absolutely, sure.
Hopefully it gets traction like me comparing Cooley to Slaff. Like all of a sudden, that guy. All of a sudden, Montreal fans fucking came out of the woodwork.
Oh, God, what a bum.
Tweeted and comments about how much of a jackass I am because, you know, and to a point, like, there for every bad one that I got a good one that was like, they're both going to be elite players. Why are you making this comparison? And I'm like, well.
Granny's back. I didn't realize there's two grannies put on my screen. I was like, how is there two of you? Okay.
But yeah, either way. Like,
yeah, I'll take it.
Mm-hmm. We should consider a GoFundMe just to ruin Toronto fans' days.
Is it? I'll donate. Granny, anything to add to that before we carry on to – it looks like it's time for a new segment.
I didn't hear any of what
this okay.
We got 5 minutes. So TLDR. Granny,
do you think that Hyman's going to hit 60? And if he does,
yes, I think he's going to hit 60.
At what point or what extreme do Toronto fans lose their shit about it because he is now in that same 60 goal category that Austin Matthews is?
Oh, they've already lost their shit about it.
Well, yeah, I mean,
they're
all online right now saying that none of his goals should count because they're backdoor tap-ins from McDavid, but nobody else has scored 50 with McDavid. I mean, Draisaitl has, but there's a reason. It's because he's fucking Draisaitl.
So let's take away. I love Austin Matthews. He's one of my favorite players in the league, even though he's a Leaf. But if we took away his backdoor tap-ins, he's not at 60 goals either. If you take his empty net goals, if you take away, if we start doing this, yeah, buttisms, you can chip away.
To be fair, Austin Matthews has like one empty net goal on the season, but I do believe he scored like 18 of his goals against bottom five teams.
But he never slapped shot at an empty net goal, so he has the honor.
That's true. He's not one of those.
He's a man of honor. Those backdoor tap-ins are honorable backdoor tap-ins.
I mean, and I'm not trying to detract from the fact that Matthew scored 60 goals because any way you score a goal in the NHL isn't easy. But
no, yeah, it's not. I mean, that's my point.
The same people that make the argument that Zach Hyman just taps in McDavid passes. How many other players were able to do that playing with McDavid? I mean, Zach Cassian topped out at 24. You still have to be talented. Like, it's not that simple. And
which the fact that Zach Cassian scored 24 goals on McDavid's wing is just totally. He's amazing. Anyways,
but the fact that like it wasn't just McDavid. He had McDavid and then Draisaitl on one wing, and Cassian on the other. So.
I could have scored that many.
It took McDavid and Draisaitl for Cassian to score 24 goals.
I mean, that's like automatic goal machine. Jeez.
So, well, yeah, I do think he's going to get 60 as well. And you know what? I hope his 60th goal is a backdoor tap in, but I hope his 59th is like off the rush from the top of a circle, just so that right before he taps one in to hit 60, that clip circulates around so that Toronto, you know, and everybody can throw it in Toronto's fans' faces that he's more than a one trick pony.
Yeah, no, I know. It's just, but if you're going to be a one trick pony, even if that's all Zach Hyman is, which it's not, I'm not saying it is, to be that elite that you can score 60 times off of that, that is something.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to be a one trick pony, make sure it's a good trick. And yeah. Zach Hyman has found the perfect one.
You know, I mean, hey, a goal is a goal, like you guys said. I mean,
It's kind of like
more goals than that guy scored. That
guy's a power play merchant. Well, I don't give a shit. It counts as a goal on the scoreboard.
No.
Like, they didn't win 2.5-2 because a power play goal only counts for half. It's still a goal in the NHL.
Yeah.
You still have to score on an NHL caliber goaltender,
mm-hmm.
no matter exactly. how, unless you have an empty net. Empty net goals are the only time you can be like, oh, he's an empty net merchant. But I don't hear anybody talking shit about Alex Ovechkin leading the NHL in history in empty net goals.
Well, he doesn't play for Arizona or a desert team, so.
Or any – well, I mean, but
– not as Hyman, though.
But if Ovi's yeah. guy – well,
Hyman has rich parents, so.
With rich parents and
yeah.
where, you know, Austin Matthews also happens to play in a Canadian market, so.
Yeah, so.
You know, if Zach Hyman it's different. Was scoring those goals on passes from Connor McDavid in, say, Carolina, nobody would give a shit.
Hey, you got
except,
that right.
Except Leafs fans, because he was a former Leaf.
I love Leafs fans. They keep me. They make my internet experience a lot better, honestly. But are we ready for the new
Let's
expanded edition of Tyler's Question of the Week? Well, three questions of the week. You guys ready? All right, so let me write down the time for our editor here. 57th minute, sounds like a Chelsea goal. All right, so I have three questions for you. You guys can work together or not, either way you want to handle it.
Hang on, I'm going to cut you off. That's not a Chelsea goal. If that was a soccer goal at all, it would have been in the 89th minute. It would have been the first goal of the game in a game that ends 2-1.
You know, actually, has Chelsea been playing this season? You're actually not wrong. I know you're trolling me here, but you're actually absolutely correct. Absolutely, and we usually lose in the 89th minute. So that actually are very accurate.
Because soccer is like baseball. The last inning in baseball is what's important. The last 10 minutes in a soccer game are what's important because it's 0-0 until then.
What about stoppage time?
That's why I said the last 10 minutes. You have the 89th minute and then stoppage time.
You know, I'm taking you to a soccer game one of these days. I'm going to convert you, forcefully or otherwise.
There's a pretty good chance that I'll be too drunk to finish the game.
That's kind of the whole point. That's why you go. That's why you go.
There's nothing else to do at a soccer game. There's nothing worthwhile.
Yeah. You know what? We'll have this discussion after the pod.
We have cheerleaders because, I mean.
No, we have supporter sections that spray beer in the hot summer days when the rising scores.
What a waste of beer.
All right.
I bet there's at least 50% of the games where no beer is sprayed because it ends in a 0-0 tie.
I'm going to start keeping a tally just for you. I'll get back to you. I'll see you in October. All right. So on to my beautiful challenge. So I have three questions for you. It's going to be NHL-wide. I think only a couple of these teams are technically defunct. So here we go. The first one, name teams related to or that are big cats.
Panthers.
NHL-wide. So, yeah, the Panthers.
Oh, okay. Yep. Florida. Yep. Nashville.
Yep. Now, one is defunct, and one is still in the NHL, but they don't go by this name anymore. I can give hints, but.
All right, so.
I'm trying to think of the defunct team.
So for the defunct team, they said to move us to this city at one point.
So it's not one of those teams that like got folded when the WHL joined the NHL or something like that, is it?
Don't believe so. Research, no, they said it was an NHL team, so I didn't go that deep, but they were around, and they were in a neighborhood that they told us to move to. Hint, it's very close to another NHL team that I hate very much. Original six team that I hate very much. We just talked about him. He was a former player for them. He now has rich parents and scores 50 goals. It's near them. It's near them. It's not that team, but it's near that team.
So was it one of the teams that got proposed to move to Calgary before Atlanta did?
Granted, you'll get to this one. It's a play about the Revolutionary War. The Broadway show, yeah, sorry.
Hamilton. I figured it's Hamilton.
Hamilton, Hamilton Tigers. The last one. Yeah, Hamilton Tigers. The last one, they're still in the NHL. They're not known as this team. They were, before they became the name they are now, they were the Falcons.
Art, do they still play in the same city?
Yes. Not move cities, just change names. Color scheme has also been the same.
Man, that's...
I can give you... let's see. The production line played for their later name.
Man, you need like music in the background.
I know. I mean, I can try and see if we can get some. Yeah.
Production line. That was Buffalo, wasn't it?
No. Nope.
So wait a minute. If they were the Falcons, and then they changed their name to a cat.
So they were this name, then the Falcons, then their current name.
Okay, and I'm assuming they're...
Arizona has them. We don't usually call them this, but if they're in your area, you're pretty happy about it online.
Bobcats?
No. You usually get an advert Cougars. For them being in your area. Yes, Cougars. The Detroit Cougars. Cougars. Detroit Cougars. The Detroit Cougars. They became the Falcons and then became the Red Wings in 1932.
Wow.
Right? Yeah. So, these are all... I have one bonus, so there's a bonus one for this one. If you get it, great. I didn't know. I forget about this team. But however, these are all current NHL teams in their current cities, so no trick questions here outside the bonus. Name NHL teams with stars in their logo. Stars in the logo.
Minnesota Wild.
Yep.
Nashville Predators.
They have a star? Oh, they had a little three ball. I
circle.
That.
Yep.
I'll count it. I didn't add that one, but I'll count it. I'll count
Dallas
that.
Stars. Well, obviously the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, Dallas Stars. Yep. The Minnesota Columbus, Wild, Dallas Stars.
Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yep. One
Vegas
more.
Vegas Golden Knights.
I didn't count that. But yeah, see, I was debating on that too. I always had to decide, and I didn't put that one in. I'll give you Nashville because that's the three stars. Deal. But yeah. But there's one more.
It's not their primary logo. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'll count. I'll give you Nashville. I didn't think about it, but yeah, I'll give it to you. I'll let you have that one. But there's one more. You said Columbus. Yep, one more, and then have a bonus.
Minnesota.
New York Rangers?
No. I thought so too, but no, they don't. I looked at all their logos too. They don't have any. However, there is a team in that area that did.
LA Kings.
No.
I'm pretty positive between the LA Kings. There's a star, isn't there?
No. I thought so. There's no star in the Sabres. I looked. I thought there was too, but no. It's actually the Washington Capitals.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
now, the bonus one was it. They're in the city of the Rangers. Do you know their name? Not the Islanders. They went by Brooklyn and New York, but what was the team name? It might have been
We're talking about a historic team.
Yeah, this one is. Yeah, this has been, okay. They've been long gone. I didn't know. I looked up logos, they were stars. I was like, oh, I forgot about this guy. But yeah, they have a really stupid, it's kind of like it's the New York Americans. New York / Brooklyn Americans. I didn't know really about them until I saw this chart, but okay, and last one. I had to make this one a little vague to fit, and even then I might have missed one, but I'm hoping. All of these, except for two, are current NHL teams. So it's going to be name the teams related to the ocean / water.
Sharks,
yep.
Kraken.
Yep.
Canucks.
California Golden Seals.
He got the Golden Seals, yep. That's one of my defunct ones I put on there. Canucks, yep.
Hartford Whalers.
Hartford Whalers, yep.
Hurricanes.
Hurricanes, yep.
So are we considering the New York Islanders since they have the Fisherman logo?
Yeah, I did consider them, so yes. Yep.
Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yep.
I guess that's Stormy. That,
I considered it was Tampa Bay. I was like, all right, screw it. I'll count it, but I was pretty loose on that one. That's why I said water.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I was like, eh, yeah.
If you're going city name, I mean.
Yeah. Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yep. The Disney-owned team before 2007.
The Mighty Ducks.
Yep. And then I have one more on there. Oh, two. They're both in the same city, though. Larry Fitzgerald played for this college. It was one of them. It was, yes, Pittsburgh Penguins and Pittsburgh Pirates.
Yeah, Matt said Penguins.
Oh, no.
Oh, did you? Oh, I didn't hear it. Okay. Yeah. I didn't hear that. Okay. So, yeah, then Pirates. Yep. Pittsburgh Pirates. Pirates
being the defunct team.
Yep. That was it. Yep, and the Seals were moved to, what was it, San Jose, right? Or would they move again? I forgot where they moved. I just wrote them down.
They moved to
Minnesota, North Stars.
No, first they moved to Kansas City, then they moved to Minnesota. Bulldogs. Then they moved to Dallas. So.
And the Whalers became the Hurricanes.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And that was it. That was my challenge for you guys. That my extended question of the week. Good job. I thought the Cougars went through for a loop. I was like, how do I not tell them I was going to like name a list of captains? But once I see Steve Eisenman, like, oh, Detroit, like, yeah. But I didn't know they were, yeah, the Cougars. What a weird name. I don't know why they even called that, but fair enough.
Up in Detroit, that makes no sense.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I was like, okay, Falcons are pretty generic. Like, okay,
you know what? 100 years ago, you don't know if there were Cougars in Detroit.
Yeah, I guess so.
Actually, I'm sure there's still Cougars in Detroit.
Yeah, I'm sure there are. They're happy on your area. That's it. All right, boys. Thanks for answering my question of the week. I'm glad you guys enjoyed that. I'll try to make that more of a thing. Hopefully, you know, we'll come up with some more creative ones there. But yeah, so that's it. Anything we want to add before we kind of wrap this thing up? Anything you guys want to discuss? Got a little bit more time.
I think we're getting good at this. Actually, I think
yeah. Kind of getting our flow back.
Yeah, the most important thing I think that I'd like to remind everybody is that there hasn't been an announcement yet on the public land auction.
We're
still waiting for a posting on that. I've seen a lot of people asking on Twitter when the auction's supposed to happen. We just don't know yet. So that's out there, but keep an eye out for that coming up. Some of the hurdles that Morello is going to have to jump through to make that work, but we're getting close. And as the season winds down, we'll see what happens with Josh Doan. We'll see what happens with Dylan Gunther and Michael Kesselring. You know, when do they potentially send him back to Tucson? But the Roadrunners won 7-3 against San Diego last night. They're poised for home ice as long as they play well down the stretch. So Tucson playoffs are going to be a fun thing to keep an eye out on.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to try and make a game if I can. I need to go down there and catch one. I haven't done that yet. I moved back here 2 years ago, haven't gone down. So it's on my list of things to do.
It'll cost you more in gas to get here than it will to get in the building.
Right, that's fine. Works for me. I'll take it.
Yeah. Tucson watching Cooley, Gunther, Doan keep developing like this. There's still reasons to watch the rest of these games. It's going to be a fun end of the season with the way these kids are playing.
So just out of curiosity, did you guys know Michael Kesselring? I guess I must have missed this. Did you know this is technically his rookie season?
Yeah.
Is it really? I didn't know that.
He's 24 years old, so he's still under that 26-year-old threshold to be considered a rookie. But I could have sworn he had played like 10 games for Edmonton last year. You know, he played 6 or 7 for us. I assumed that he had played some games when he was 22, and the rookie rules in the NHL say 25 games or 2 consecutive seasons where you've played more than 10 games. So I guess nobody has talked about it. I just didn't realize.
I have not seen it. Yeah. I didn't even know that.
But I thought Michael Kesselring congratulations on your rookie season. It was a doozy.
It was. I thought his rookie. I thought his NHL debut was with us. He did play some games with Edmonton, though.
I want to say he played a couple of games with Edmonton. I think he got a call up for one or two shortly before the AHL All-Star break, because if I remember right, he was supposed to be an AHL All-Star, and there was questions as to whether or not he was going to play because he may not be in the AHL at the time. So maybe his debut was with us. Maybe it was speculation. But, yeah, I didn't realize this was actually his rookie season. I can't say that I remember watching a single broadcast where, you know, McConnell, Nash, any of them brought up the fact that Kesselring's only a rookie.
I have seen Pat Brown bring it up on Twitter in his my optimistic thoughts of the day thing that he brings up.
I do like his segment on those.
Me too, yeah.
But yeah, I guess I don't know why it didn't dawn on me. I'm guessing it's because he's 24 years old and you don't see a lot of rookies at 24 come into the league. But and when you do, I mean, they're usually not playing, you know, 70 games. You know, and he has been scratched a few times. I think he'll finish the year probably somewhere around 65 games or 67 games or so. But, you know, that's a pretty healthy number for him, and congrats to him on officially being in the show. I think he's had a great year.
Yeah. Yeah. So too. Yeah.
He has all the lookings of a long, I mean, I would definitely call it a successful rookie season. Yeah. So
absolutely. One last thought for anybody listening. We are going to have our draft special on April 23rd. It's Tuesday. Please tune in, you know, catch us live. We're going to have a couple of guests on the show. Not going to reveal anybody quite yet until we've got some things finalized, but
got to dangle the carrot. Yeah.
You know, for anybody that listened last year, I don't think our show disappointed. We had, you know, Scott Wheeler, Mike Gould, you know, come in, talk about their favorite prospects. Hoping to have
fun time, a lot of fun.
Yeah. Hoping to have some very knowledgeable people on chatting with us. That'll be Tuesday, April 23rd. We'll announce who and a time for that show, hopefully at the time of our next episode, which somewhere around April 9th. So April 10th, I think, will be our next show. So, Listen for it. We'll tweet it out. We'll make sure everybody knows, but it's going to be a great one. We're going to be talking Coyotes prospects. We're going to be talking draft eligible prospects. Those are always my favorites after a losing season.
Yeah, that's honestly, yeah. Hearing you guys talk about the prospects, it makes it seem like it ain't so bad. The sting is just a little bit less. But Granny, before we get out of here, anything you want to add?
No, just thank you all for listening. We'll be back in about a week and a half.
All right. Well, from all of us here at the Tripping Notes Podcast, have a great night. We'll see you next time.